Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to episode 120 of Rogue Startups. This week, Dave and I have a special guest on the podcast, someone that a lot of folks in the community will know, Damian Thompson. So, Damian, how you doing?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for hopping on. I appreciate it. And yeah, excited to dig into all things kind of sales related. So for the few folks who don't know who you are and kind of what you're up to, you want to give kind of your Superman Genesis story?
Yeah, sure. So as Mr. Walling loves to say, you know, I've been selling for 3 decades. So he likes to age me like that. But so I've been selling software since the 90s. You know, I love it. I'm a you know, a technical-ish sales and marketing person. You know, I'm not a developer. I don't do that, but I'm pretty savvy. You know, starting in kind of corporate. I traditionally done enterprise sales for companies like McAfee and Trend Micro and Symantec and all of that, and then a couple of different startups. But really, kind of got about 2010. I decided to kind of burn the suit and tie and got into this, you know, weird space of online entrepreneurship and technical co-founding and this kind of stuff. And you know, found the Rob Wallings of the world and the Tropical MBA guys and all that kind of community and tried to figure out kind of how to do things online. And in doing that, did the mistake that everyone makes, which is like, hey, I've got 20 years experience and I'm really good at something. So let me go do something totally different because now I'm online. So let me go learn about conversion rate optimization. Let me learn about this. Let me learn about that. And you know, so a bunch of failed projects and then finally realized, hey, actually, I know a lot about selling software and services. So how do I turn that to online? And so I started coaching and consulting to primarily SaaS companies or technical founders of companies and helping them understand how to create a sales process, what they're doing wrong, and that's sort of good stuff. And through that, met my business partner and co-founder, Justin McGill, who Justin was actually a sales coaching customer of mine for about a year, the first year of LeadFuse. So the first year of LeadFuse, I wasn't actually a full-time part of the business. And then you know, things happen, babies, marriage, all kinds of stuff. And I decided that I didn't want to do the coaching consulting anymore. I missed being a part of a team. I missed building something. And so just, you know, Justin said, hey, we're big enough now to probably come bring you on if you wanted. And we talked about it. And you know, 48 hours later, I, you know, signed some contracts. And a couple months later, I packed up the family and moved out to Phoenix. So, and I've been with LeadFuse now full time for the last year and a half. And LeadFuse is a B2B lead generation software whose goal is to kill the cold call.
Death to the cold call. Hate the cold call.
Yep. Kill it.
Cold calling is so hard. So is cold emailing. So the first question I would have for you, Damian, is where do you see that technical founders are falling short in their sales process right now? And where do you guys kind of fix that?
So I think everyone falls short in the sales process in the same way, regardless of their technical or not. The challenge with technical people is a lot of times, and again, like I came up through these companies that built these amazing pieces of software, and there's this wrong notion of if it's the software is good enough, that's good enough, right? If I build something good enough, then I can do it. Or if I do good work, it's good enough. You know, I'm an application developer. I do ad hoc work for people, and I do great work. My customers love me. Cool. But you know, have you created a repeatable process to find more customers? Have you found a creatable, you know, repeatable process to ensure that you're maximizing the opportunity there? And it's unfortunately, I love sales. It's I'm passionate about it. It's the thing I've chosen to do with my life. And there's a very negative connotation to it. But the reality is, if you're in business, you're in sales. That your job is to generate revenue for your company. And so I actually think technical people actually become some of the best salespeople because they take some of that, you know, emotion out of it and realize that it is a process like anything else and you've got to figure it out. And the great thing about like technical people is, you know, a lot of times they come from a, you know, test and management kind of thought process, right? And let's, you know, here's my theory of what's going to work and I'm going to write the code and I'm going to do it. It didn't work. Let me test it and find out why. And sales is the same way. And, you know, the biggest thing I like for technical people is, you know, they'll trust the numbers. They'll trust that rather than saying, you know, salespeople, you know, become salty old dogs, like, well, this is what I do because this is what I've always done. And that's a recipe for disaster. So, you know, you have to have a little bit more of an inquisitive mind, I think, to get good at selling in today's environment.
So, you know, one of the things, one of the quotes I love, I don't know, on Twitter or something like that, I saw from you was there's no kind of offline and online selling world anymore. It's all just channels that you can reach your customers through. And I think that you're dead right on technical people being really good sellers because they have a process and understanding. They also have a lot of rapport with customers because they solve their problem in a real kind of direct way, being like the technical person that's creating a solution, as opposed to someone who might not be technical. But I think it's tough for technical people to get started with sales. And I'll define sales as like more towards the enterprise, right? Where you have to get on the phone with somebody, right? Is that kind of what you talk about when you're talking about sales, Damien?
Well, so it depends. It's funny, you know, one of the big lessons for us in 2017, and, you know, we take a very, you know, technical approach to our business. And so, you know, I joke about it with Justin. You know, we ran 30 different tests in our business last year, and 28 of them were huge failures. And, you know, the majority of the failures were doing best practice kind of stuff. Like, there is no such thing as best practice, right? I think what a technical founder does well is if they understand a problem they're trying to solve, is that's why that rapport builds, because they're trying to solve that problem rather than, hey, this is how I've always done it and this is the process I have. So, you know, we do some things that are very, you know, unique and not where we started. So we built the business, you know, bootstrap company, you know, it was basically a list generation tool first. Then I had some people, because of Justin's podcast and because of the community, we had some people that knew us and invested a little bit of money in a kind of fund strap sort of thing. And we used that money and then burned through all that money doing best practice stuff that didn't work, right? So building out a sales team and doing a discovery call and then a live demonstration. And I mean, and we tried it all. We tried every part of that process and it literally almost destroyed the business. And so what we've learned is that, and these lessons, the problem with best practices and cliches is when you hear it, you say, oh yeah, that makes sense and I want to try it, but how it works for you is different. So we had this kind of underlying philosophy about sales. Like, look, let's make this easy for people to give us their money, right? And give us their money the way they want to give it to us and not put our preconceived notions on it. But we have to put our preconceived notions first to test, right? So, okay, this is what a sales process looks like. And this is, you know, this is how big companies buy things. Big companies buy things, an enterprise deal, people talk about enterprise sales. It's not actually the number. It's not even the size of the company. It's their buying procedure. So in an enterprise deal, what happens is some middle person, some middle manager, some lower person is tasked with going out, finding out information, figuring out what's out there, figuring out how they can solve the problem. And that's the person who engages with the organization. And then that person, you know, they're willing to, like, their job is to go out and do this discovery project for 30, 60, 90 days or whatever. So they have no problem with taking as much time as possible of your time and of their time for demos and calls and multiple calls and calls to discuss the next call and that kind of thing. That process is what an enterprise deal is. And that's why you have to have so many people involved on your side too, pre-sales engineers and all that kind of good stuff. So that's cool if that's how they buy. But if they don't buy that way, a lot of the SaaS 2.0, you know, the best practice stuff, you have the SaaSers and the Close.io's and that kind of stuff, they've just taken that kind of enterprise sales process and said, okay, well, we can still do that. We can do that for software too, for SaaS too. And, you know, here's how you do that. And you can use tools to automate some of it. And you can, but it's just so ineffectual. Like, so we were doing the demos thing and literally, like, our no-show rate was better than 50%. Wow. So what happens is not wow. only... Not only do people not show up, like, that block of time is a waste but now even worse, because they're taking that time and not using it, we were getting to the point where we were having to book demos a week out, 8 days out. So someone shows up and says, hey, I'm interested. Please take my money. We're like, yeah, cool. We'll talk to you in a week. Mm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's worth it if you're closing $500,000 deals and that's your, but that's not if you're selling a SaaS tool for a couple hundred dollars a month. So we figured that out the hard way and, you know, figure, okay, this is not working. What do we do and how we fix this? And so that was one of the big things. So we don't do demos. We don't do live demos at all. We have a recorded demo that you see and you can get to it. You know, you can go see it. We have our big aha, a second big aha for us was we are very interesting. We don't do trials. There is no such thing as a trial for our software anymore. Because what we found is we tried everything to get engagement better in trials. We tried to, you know, force them to do some work first, like videos or training. We tried to educate them through email marketing, all this kind of stuff. And the reality was people were signing up and then were either not using the tool, which is a big part of it, or worse for us and for them, was they would use the tool incorrectly and incorrectly assume they couldn't help them, right? or have these notions that, hey, I'm going to sign up for a trial and you're going to give me some sort of result in that period of time that trial is for.
Yeah.
This is marketing. This is going to take months for this to work, right? Like, you got to figure out what your message is, who your market is. And the idea that you're going to come in and in 14 days are going to get some sort of commercial result with our tool specifically in our space, it was a huge thing. So now there are no trials. You show up, we do a live trial on the site. We'll answer all your questions. We'll shoot you a little video and show you what kind of leads we have for your market. We'll talk about the education, all the rest of it. But if you want it, you got to sign up for it. You got to pay for it. You know, and then you sign up for it, you pay for it, because you're getting leads. Because we're actually giving you something when we do that, getting those leads. Our third big thing that we realized was, so we had churn problems. Everyone has churn problems. But I mean, we had really bad churn problems. So not only are we a SaaS company.
Sorry, what define really bad, if you could?
Yeah, so I mean, we're talking, you know, I mean, 20
double digit percent.
Oh, 25%. Yeah. I mean, okay. Like, you know, like,
wow.
Crazy. What, yeah.
Per month?
Yeah,
per month?
Yeah, yeah, 25%.
Holy shit. So, yeah, you're turning over your customer base every four times a year, three times
well,
a year.
And so for the long time, we could hide that because we were just growing so fast too, right? But churn catches up to everybody. And so we tried everything to get rid of that. We tried, you know, price. We tested price points last year, everywhere from $97 to $750 a month, and everywhere in the middle. And what we figured out is there's a fair range, about $200 to $400 a month is the right range for our product for people to sign up. But there's these things, and this goes out of best practice. You think of best practice, think of SaaS, you think of the three column things, you think of the middle one's the one you want. Well, that's actually crazy. Like, if the far right offering is your best offering, is the offering that's going to get your customers to have the most success with your tool, make it a slam dunk easy yes for them. So what we've done is we've said, okay, the first big test we had was say, okay, we're going to have three versions of the software. The third version is the best one, the one they're going to have more likely to have a chance to have success. So we're actually going to make that cheaper than the second version, right? And so we say, oh, this actually kind of works because we're incentivizing them to take the right choice, to make the right choice. So then we realize, okay, well, that's working a little bit and it's helping us get down. But there's a bigger thing here. So look, we are in a unique position in that not only are we a SaaS company, we're also in the lead gen space, which is a high churn business as well, right? So people just misunderstand what that means. So they think they're going to show up. They're going to put X dollars on the table, buy a list of leads, throw out thousands of spam emails and hope to get 1% response rate. And that's good for them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that doesn't work. Those days are way, way gone. So in order to have success with our tool, you actually have to come in and understand some basic marketing tenets about cold email, how to write good cold emails, how to respond to people, how to actually target your market. So there's education you have to have. And if you're not willing to do that work, you are going to fail, period. You're not going to show up and just use our tool on day one without learning how to use our tool correctly. And so we had to try to figure out how to incentivize that behavior. And so what we've done is we said, okay, now we actually only sell the same version of the tool. We have one version of our tool you get. It's 500 lead credits a month. It's unlimited emails. It's all these things. What we do is we've got one version, and that version is month to month. We've got another version, which is you're committing to a year. Now, you still get to pay month to month, but you're signing a one-year commitment.
Mm.
The one-year commitment is $100 less a month because we want you to take that plan. And it's not a churn buster for us. It is, if you're serious, if you're going to have success, you're going to have to come in here and realize your first month's goal is not a sale. You're not going to get a sale in your first month. Your first month goal is, let me find a subject line that gets me a 30 to 40% open rate or better. That's your goal in month one. Right? And then your goal in month two is, okay, now I'm getting the opens. Now how do I get a click rate? How do I create content that's interesting enough to my target market to get them to take action upon that? Awesome. And then month three is, okay, now how do I find the perfect market for me? So I'm saying it's going to take you 90. Anyone that thinks they're going to have success in anything in less than that, but it's crazy. Like, people would sign up and would say, hey, I've given you $300, you know, a week ago, and I haven't got a deal yet. Your tool doesn't work. Well, would you write one blog post and you also didn't have a deal? So content marketing doesn't work. You know, so it's weird in the lead space. Like, there's this expectation of, you know, what that is. And so we've learned that the customers that have success, they have to come in. They have to learn how to use the tool. And if we don't incentivize them to use it, they're not going to. And so we've done some really, if you look at, you know, your average SaaS and us, we are very different. You know, we don't want you on month to month. We want you to focus on 12 months because that's what's going to take, right? And so we're going to incentivize that behavior. We're going to kind of ramp it up. So we put a lot of energy and resources into education. We've got like a free training course we do and all that. And not, this is a course we could sell as an info product if we wanted to. But because it's not just about using the tool. It's what works in cold email. What do you need to do? How do you do copywriting? You know, and so it's all about like forcing us And it becomes, this is where the cliche comes in, where the big change for us, and it sounds like a silly dot-com-y kind of, you know, sassy thing to do, is, was really, I changed my title from, you know, chief sales officer to chief customer officer. And that can be a real cheesy thing, except for it's not. It's a mindset thing, which is, my job is to get customers having success using our tool. Because if they have success using our tool, they won't leave. And I know that's what everyone says. That's what they say. But do you really feel that way? Are you doing everything you can to help your customers have success? Because if you're not, you're going to have churn problems. So that's kind of the big stuff. So, but we literally would never have got there if we just had followed best practice advice.
Well, thank God you didn't actually do a sock puppet.
Exactly. .com, baby.
So, right, yeah. So Damien, as you guys ran 30 experiments in a month, I mean, I think this is something that a lot of people look at as, I hate to say it, a best practice, but definitely something you have to try a bunch of shit to see what works in yours, because the stuff that Justin McGill did isn't the same thing that Heaton Shaw did, isn't the thing that Dave Rodenbaugh does. But I think setting up and planning and measuring, evaluating these experiments is really a difficult thing for someone to get their head around if they haven't done it or haven't done it a lot. So can you kind of talk about how you guys, I don't know, what you learned running experiments, just in terms of how you run experiments?
Yeah. So I think, you know, we definitely, again, we don't do the best practices. So best practice experience would be, you test one thing at a time, right? You give it a nice long window of to test it. But if you're a
it's
small
not realistic
business
for
grow,
a bootstrap business,
not,
right?
Yeah. You can't afford to do that. No time.
You can't. And it gets even more dangerous when you know what we're doing, which is we're testing pricing, right? So, you know, all of a sudden you test pricing and we'd have anywhere from, you know, we average maybe 40 or 50, let's say, deals a month, and we make some big test pricing change. And that would, you know, if we were increasing the pricing and it stayed the same, well, awesome. We had a great month that month. So last year, our revenue looks crazy. Like we'd have a month where we would do, you know, $20,000 in new MRR, right? But we were bleeding so much out of the back end because we were charging too much money, right? So people were sure we were getting them to sign up still, but their expectation was an even faster result, which is the exact opposite of what we're trying to tell them. And so we're making these changes with pricing, which is screwing with, you know, the money coming into the business, which is the lifeblood to keep the business going. And so I think, you know, it comes down to, you know, Justin says it, he's right, like last year added years to our life. Last year was the hardest year I've had in business. And I've been in business, you know, I've been working 30-ish years, right? And I was in corporate and high pressure also, and I've had some tough. Last year was the toughest. It was just pressure all the time. There was always, every test felt like we were betting the company on it. And again, most of those tests fail, right? Most of those fail. But what we would do is, you know, you have to check yourself. Like, you know, the idea was we're going to let this test run for a month at least, which still I know is nowhere near long enough. But sometimes you just see, like, you know, we did a couple things where it was, you know, money back guarantee, perfect example. So we've never had a money back guarantee. We sell lead data is the first thing we sell, right? And then we have a platform you can use on top of that. So when you buy something from us, you're getting something of value on day one. That's it, right? So we have never had it. It never was a contributing factor. But when we started figuring out our pricing a little more, we said, okay, well, what if we tested that? Let's test it. Let's not just guess it's still the right way to do it. So we tested to see if that was right. And it literally did exactly the worst thing. We created a 7-day money back guarantee. And now what someone reads that is, that doesn't read to them, hey, these guys are standing by their things. And I'll make it 30 days. I don't care what the time limit is, but they say, okay, well, that with that money back guarantee, you think the behavior you're incentivizing is engendering trust with them. That, hey, you know, we're confident it's going to work, and if it doesn't, we're going to give your money back. But that's not what you're doing. The real signal that we, at least for our market, the signal we were saying was, hey, here's a period of time that you can come in and spam the shit out of people, and then if you don't have success, you can get all your money back. Mm-hmm. And that's literally the behavior they did. That was the list.
Behavior. Yeah.
Everybody that signed up, blast, you know, day two, blasting hundreds of emails out a day. And we tell them it's going to take time to ramp up. It doesn't matter how well you educate them. The behavior you're incentivizing is sign up, spam the shit out of people, and then give me my money back. And so we're like, this is a huge failure. So we only that test ran for a week and a half. And we said, no, this is not. Literally every person that signed up under that plan, because they had multiple plans at the time, that's the behavior they did. As soon as they signed up, that's what they did. And so like sometimes you fail quickly, and that's good because you know. But this is what I'm saying. Like, don't listen to people say, you've got to do this. You've got to do demos. You've got to do calls. You've got to do money back guarantees. You've got to do month to month. You've got to do, I don't care. We tested self-cancellation and not self-cancellation. All right. So, okay, can we people that are canceling, let's find out why they're canceling. And more importantly, let's incentivize them to stay. And then incentivization doesn't have to be money. It can be about, you know, helping them more, helping them have success with the tool. But the challenge was, is that we weren't saving people in doing that. And all we were really doing is putting up a roadblock for people to leave. And it pisses people off when you do that, right? They want to be able to leave when they can. Well, cool. So that's not the behavior you want. So let's get rid of that. And that's how we came around to this idea of this contract thing, saying, you know what? You can pay monthly. It's not about us getting all your money up front, but we need you to think long term. Mm-hmm. You need to enter into this thinking, this is going to take me some time to get good at this. And if you have that thought process, you are far more likely to have success. And if you have that thought process, you're far more likely to go and do the education we tell you to do. And so again, it's the quintessential product market fit stuff too. It's, you know, a lot of our early customers were very new business owners. So they were coming to us and we were their last hope. Right. So, ooh. You know, and so like, that is not the money you want. You don't want last hope money, right? Because, you know, there's a reason why you're the last hope, because they haven't figured out what they do yet. They haven't figured out who they sell to. They haven't figured out what's specialized, what they're different about. And they're showing up and saying, hey, please make a miracle happen. You know, I want to buy magic beans. I want that beanstalk to the sky. And so it's about figuring out, okay, well, that's not the market we want. So why are we attracting that market? And it turned out we were attracting it because we were telling them that's what they were going to get. Like, we didn't think we were, but we're talking about things like automation, you know, don't have to spend time in the tool and don't have to do this and don't have to do that. And that message resonated really well, but their expectation then was wrong. Right. So when we started saying, actually, you know what, pump the brakes a bit, you're going to have to do a lot of work. Right. This is still about you more than it's about us. We're going to help you. We're an assistant. We're a tool. We're a shovel. Right. We're not the gold mine itself. Right. So we're going to help you get there, but it comes down to you. Who are you? What's your business? What do you sell? Who do you sell it to? You know, we're going to, you know, automate a lot of the heavy lifting, but you still have to do the work. And that change is what, you know, turned the business on. Now we're profitable and we're growing very fast, all that kind of good stuff, because we realize, okay, we're actually selling the wrong market and it's our fault, right? We're saying these things that we think are being interpreted this way, but really they're being interpreted a totally different way. Mm-hmm. And that's the hardest thing to do. The hardest thing to do is to, you know, you write something and you read it and you miss all your spelling errors because you read it the way you've meant to say it, right? That's what you see, you know, and then someone else sees it and there's red pen everywhere. That same thing in your message, right? You think you're saying one thing, but really how they're interpreting is something different.
Yeah. And as you were saying all of this, I was thinking to myself, this is exactly probably why I didn't nail cold email. So earlier last year, I gave cold email a shot with a few thousand contacts that I had dug up through various sources. And I went through that for like 2 to 3 months-ish. Definitely never nailed a message. And I wrote the whole experience off as, well, cold email doesn't work for my market. So that my question to you is, some guy like me shows up. How do you help them deal with the perception that cold email doesn't feel effective? You know, channel oversaturation, bad emails, people getting tired of untargeted stuff. I mean, how do you guys deal with channel fatigue and people not understanding cold email? And, you know, what does that look like with you guys?
So I'm going to steal something from Jason Lumpkin here. It's one of the things he says I love is this idea that, you know, hey, everything's changed, you know, saturation, you know, all the rest of this, you know, so just outbound, you know, lead gen still work. And he says, you know, outbound marketing always works, and it does always work. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I love Slack. I love all these tools. Email's not dead. People still communicate by email. It's still the number, it's the killer app of the internet still, right? So people spend, you know, hours a day in their inbox, right? Your target market generally. So that has not changed. The second thing that hasn't changed is, they still have 2 or 3 big business problems in their business, period. Nothing's changed. They have problems in their business they need to get solved. They have problems in their business they are willing to pay people for. Here's what has changed is how good you have to be to get those two things right. So when I started cold emailing 7 years ago, there were no tools like us on the market. This was pre-Talp, pre-Yesware, for everything. So I had VAs doing all this work. So I set up processes and paid, you know, $1,000 a month at people scraping websites and putting all this stuff together. And I would then manually send that out through Gmail, through my, you know, Gmail account to people. I would send a one email sequence, right, just one. And it would, you know, basically, I can tell you exactly what it said. Subject line, you're doing it wrong. Body, you know, hey, Craig, checking out your website X, right? I found 2 errors that are costing you customers every month. Click here to book time to talk to me about it. That was my email. It went out. And I had an 8% booking rate. 8%. Because no one else was doing it. There's so much work I had to do. Like, I mean, thousands of dollars and all my time was spent on that, right? And people weren't willing to do that. And then what happens is software comes along, right? And then now Yesware and Tell, all these elements start coming out. Then we, and then start segmenting. And now there's a bunch of different tools, a bunch of different kind of ish things in the same space. So now cold email, quote unquote, is easy, right? Getting someone's email address and, you know, hitting them with a bunch of emails is easy, quote unquote, to do. So the more it's done, the less effective it becomes, right? So I use the analogy of, you know, paid ads. AdWords is still the reason why Google is this company, right? So 15 years ago, you could just go and slap up a horrible AdWords ad and pay pennies on the dollar, and you could build a huge business from it. And then as it became more effective, more people used it. As more people used it, it became less effective and less expensive and more expensive. That's with all marketing channels. So the more that people do something, yes, the less effective that does if you're doing it poorly. So you could do it 5 years ago and do a poor job and get great results. You can't do a poor job anymore and get great results. You have to do a good job now. You have to do a good job to get decent results. Now, my thing to them is saying, look, yes, it would be awesome if we have to go back in the way back machine and go back to the easier days. Those days are gone. They're gone. What are you going to do if you don't do this? Like, what else are you doing? And also saying that at the end of the day, if we just think about this as a human being, cold email always works. Always works. If, right, I can figure out what is one of those three problems that customer has, right, and write them a personal email from me to them, I'm going to get some crazy response rate from that. 50% if I send emails. When you think of, you know, you get the advice from people and how they reach out, the Tim Ferriss of the world, those kind of guys, and they're right. You spend time, the more time I spend crafting one of you guys a super personalized email, right? And it's clear that I wrote it. It's clear that I've spent time learning about you. It's clear that we've got something in common. All of those things. Like I've gotten past your defenses at that point. Now I still have to offer you something of value for you to kind of respond to me and those kind of things. But that's the greatest chance of success you're going to have. But you can't scale that. You can do that for your first couple of customers. And cool, that's what you should do. That's what you should do for your first couple of customers. Don't come to us for your first two customers. All right. So go spend that time, find the 50 people you really want, and spend an hour on each email. All right. And do that. And you're going to get two of them respond. Awesome. That's all you need at the beginning. But how do you turn that into a process you can work? So what we've focused on has now been, hey, we're going to automate a lot of the drudgery, the list building, the outreach, the rest of it. But real success is going to come down to you personalizing to the people that are interested. So we're going to say, look, you send out 100 emails, a good open rate is 30 to 40% in cold email. You know, a good click rate is, you know, maybe four or five of those. So everyone who's clicked on a piece of content you've created, that's someone interested, right? They've received your email, they've opened your email, they've read your email, and whatever you said was interesting enough for them to go check out that piece of content you put the link to. That is someone showing interest enough. And again, it depends on where you are in your business. In my world, if I was building my own business again and I was using our tool, everyone that clicked, I would call. Right. That, you know, if that scares you, everyone who opens, I'm going to personalize an email. So what you can do in our tool is instead of that third, you got a 4-step sequence. I see you open up my email too. What I can go do is I can go hijack the third email and write you a personalized email. So now I'm going to go check out your website. Now I'm going to go do the research on you personally. So I'm going to do outreach at scale. And then the people that show some level of interest, then I'm going to spend the time personalizing to them. So I'm only focusing on the 30 people I know are getting the email rather than the 100 people. And that's what you do. And so, yes, it's more work. It's more work. That's all there is to it. But it's still super effective. I mean, we've got people, you know, getting brand new customers every single month because they do this, but they're having to put the work in. And it's the same with AdWords, Facebook ads, whatever. Facebook ads work, but it's harder now, right? You got to refresh pictures. You got to change your ad copy, and you've got to be more competitive. And the pricing, but it still works. There are businesses spending millions of dollars a month on AdWords. They're not doing that because it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Right? But you can't just show up like a dummy and say, hey, I mean, this really broad audience and pay 50 cents a click and all of a sudden now I've built my business. So you have to put time and effort into anything.
No. Hey, Damon, you mentioned at the beginning, you feel like you've been selling for three lifetimes now, I think was what you said.
Oh, so, we've gone from decades to lifetimes.
Three decades. with the wealth of knowledge you're throwing down, it seems like three lifetimes worth of knowledge here. But for... when you want to go out and get inspired, or you want the answer to something, who do you look to for kind of sales and marketing inspiration and advice?
It's interesting. So inspiration, nobody. Those days are beyond me. If you can't inspire yourself, I want to be that guy. It's funny. I'm a bit contrarian to a lot of things. So I love sales. So I read them all. There's some fun stuff out there. You know, I think. It kind of depends on what you want to do. If you're looking for inspiration or motivation. You know, I think the swearing wine seller, you can't get much better than him. So Vaynerchuk is pretty good for that kind of stuff. I like Stelly at Close.io. You know, I like Jason Lumpkin at Saster. But you have to always think that, you know, all interest is self-interest, right? So what is their self-interest in putting this out there? You know, so Lemkin wants to find deal flow because he's an investor and he wants to sell people to go to his conferences, right? So, and his audience is funded startups. So if you're a bootstrap company, right, with just you and maybe you and a co-founder, be really careful when you go take advice from someone who's talking to advice to people that are going out raising a bunch of money. Because that advice is different. Like you don't have the luxury of scaling to, you know, hundreds of people and losing money. You just can't, right? So like that's tough advice. So, you know, I really feel at the end of the day, if you really want to learn what's important in selling, it's the original masters were pretty good, right? So the Zig Ziglars of the world, those guys. And because when it comes down to it, it went from being great advice to kind of feeling kind of hokey in the 80s and 90s and 2000s when we're talking about solution selling and all this kind of, you know, selling large accounts and all this kind of real strategic looking, you know, science-based selling. But the reality is, at the end of the day, my job is to find people that have a need and to fill that need for them. That's literally what my job is to do. That's what everyone's job is to do as a business. And so you get back to the Ziglars of the world, you know, his job is with the quote, you know, so he's, you know, if he can help enough people, you know, getting, you know, what they want, he's going to get what he wants. Right. And that's really what it's going to be. So you have to figure out what do your people really want? What do your customers really want? And that's not going to come from the echo chamber of the internet most of the time. It's going to come from you figuring out, you know, this is why outbound always works, because if you have to kind of create something and wait for inbound traffic or wait for someone to find you, that's really hard, really long. But if you can actually, if you know who your market, if you know who you serve and you know how you serve them, go find them, go get them, go knock on their door, go do something with them. Because it doesn't matter. You don't have to forget techniques. There's no closing. There's no close to a deal. Like that's the beginning of a relationship. So don't, you can stumble. You can, I talk too fast. I do a bunch of crazy things that aren't, you know, best practice. But if I'm passionate about solving a problem for a certain type of people, then it doesn't matter. They're going to look past all that because they want that problem solved. But that's the hard part. And you can't get that from someone else. And that's the problem with advice. The problem with advice is that's their lens. Like if you don't know who your audience is, if you don't know what problem you solve and who you solve it for, I don't care what techniques you use, you're going to fail. Like you have to figure that out. And no one can do that other than you. All right. My advice is, you know, seriously, is, you know, find someone else to be in the business with you. Find a co-founder. The best thing that happened for us was just and I be able to bounce ideas off each other constantly because no one else could do it. No one else had our frame of reference. So no one else was invested in it as we were. And so we could figure that out together. And it's like on this sales guru who was a sales coach and came in and we did all this stuff and it didn't work. Right. So, you know, I know more about selling than most people on the planet. But it doesn't mean anything if I don't know what problem we solve for who we solve it for. And that's the thing you got to figure out. That's going to change every time with every business.
Yeah. At this point, or say in the last, you know, 6 months or a year when you guys really started hitting your stride, has outbound email been a growth driver for you?
Yeah, it is. It's not our biggest. You know, we're big on content. You know, the basis of this business, you know, Justin is a marketing guy, you know, SEO and content. And that's where it started. But you know, to me, the content is a really important thing because in order for content to be good, it still has to solve the same thing. I've got to know who I'm talking to and what problems they have.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm greedy. I'm a sales guy. I'm greedy. It's not one is better. I only want one. I want them all. Right. So I want inbound work. I want outbound the work. You know, we've experimented a little bit last year with paid ads. We're not doing right now, but I want that to work too. I want every channel I can get, partnerships, affiliates, whatever. And so outbound's a driver, absolutely. It's not our biggest right now because we're just not doing it. Like we aren't at the point where we're actually taking our own advice, right? So I have a campaign going right now. We're always using our own tool. But my advice if I was a customer, would be, okay, now Damien, you need to go in every day and you need to customize those emails that people are actually responding, opening and clicking on everything else. And being a small bootstrap company, I, you know, find the time not to do that, right? Because there's enough other things to fill my day with. But if we were struggling for customers, you can guarantee that's what I would be doing. I would be going in every day and spending the hour that took to write personal emails to the 20 people that opened an email that day. And that would actually become a much bigger driver in our business.
So Justin was the very first guest on this podcast. Don't know if you knew that. Little trivia there.
Nice.
Yeah. And of course, now that he's shut down the Zero to Scale podcast, we know he's not talking publicly about LeadFuse anymore. because he had some negative experiences with transparency. Can you talk a little bit about sort of what went down there?
I mean, so I can talk about kind of the third party a little bit, right? So what I can say is that, you know, that show started with a goal, right? And both he and Greg crushed that goal much faster than I thought they were going to, right? So they actually expanded the goal, right, of what they're actually talking about. And what it was, you know, like I think a lot of podcasts were at the time, was almost self-therapy, right? This idea of neither Greg or Justin used that platform as a way to grow their business. Like that was not a driving factor in growing the business itself, like new customers signing up. It was more, hey, we're in this alone. We don't have co-founders. We're alone here. Let me talk to another smart person and we'll bounce our ideas and talk about our businesses together. We can kind of, you know, almost a, you know, mastermind on air. And then a community builds around that and it becomes this awesome thing. And I think that part of it, that purpose was solved when, you know, I became Justin's co-founder and his partner in the business. Like he didn't need that piece anymore from that. And, you know, there definitely was a lot of copycats that came out. And I don't mean like, hey, they're in the same market. I mean, people that were just literally just taking word for word copy of the website. And, you know, that was never like the big reason that it stopped. It was more, it kind of served its purpose. We also, I mean, Justin will tell you, like the podcast is a huge reason for the success of the business, not because it drove customers, because it didn't. It was a very poor biz dev source. But what it did was it helped build the network. So, you know, we met, you know, I've known Rob Walling for a couple of years now. Like Rob's been a customer in a couple of different my businesses. But Rob became a customer of Justin's, you know, business, you know, through that whole process. And then got to know Justin really well and like Justin because how do you know he's a great guy. And so Rob, when, you know, funny, I was in MicroConf Europe and Rob and I were talking and he, you know, made this comment about, you know, I keep telling Justin, if you ever want to raise a little bit of money, you know, I got to be first in. And I was like, well, it's funny he said that because we're starting to talk a little bit about raising a little bit of money. So when we went to do our very small fund strap round, like Rob led that because of the podcast relationship. And because of that, that was open up to other doors. So it, you know, it had done its thing. But once that happens, once you take investors in the business, you don't really talk financials anymore. Like that's other people's money now. Right? When it's your money, you can talk about all you want. When it's other people's money, it's a little bit harder. So I think it's a little bit all that kind of coming together and just focus too. Like it wasn't a biz dev source for us. It wasn't a lead fuse product. It was a personal project with Greg and Justin. And so when lead fuse started growing up and, you know, now we've got, you know, a bunch of employees and people have responsibilities and roles, it doesn't really make sense anymore to do that. So we keep threatening to launch our own podcast again. It just, you know, it just hasn't happened yet.
I'll help you guys out if you need help with that. Don't worry. No, I mean, I think what you just said probably resonates with Dave and I quite a bit. I mean, I think we look at the podcast as not directly affecting our businesses, but probably indirectly kind of growing the brands of our businesses. And I think it has some positive impact. I mean, personally, and I think for Dave too, if we can help some people out, like Rob and Mike have with their show, or like Justin and Greg did with Zero to Scale for a time, that's great too. Because I mean, those guys have all helped us out a lot. So if we can give back a little bit with Rogue Startups, that's great too. So, but yeah, I think there's definitely a time where the purpose and the benefit of the podcast changes as your business grows up. Yeah,
yeah, it's also like your dynamic changes too. Right? So like, forget about even the internal stuff. Is when you get to a certain point, and you're right, the awesome thing about the podcast is, you know, it builds this community and it builds this, you know, it's AM radio, right? Yeah. I feel like I know you guys before I met you because I listened to your show, right? And so I had the same thing when I had my podcast back in the Lynchpin days. And so it is this great way of doing that. And that's okay when then there's now this kind of servant leadership kind of stuff where you now have some responsibility to your audience, right? And so that's okay when the audience is smaller and you aren't slammed with your own stuff and you can serve them in the way they want. But then when that audience is getting bigger and now you've got even more on your plate for other things, and now are you doing a disservice because you're not giving them the level of community, you know, they really expect. And I mean, you see that happen a lot where it's also, okay, well, actually, we're not going to make a business out of this, right? This is not going to be a business to do this. So because of that, you know, but because it's bigger, because we've been around longer, now there's these expectations put on you. So if people are crazy, right? You guys do this show, and not only do you it for free, it actually costs you money, right? You're paying money, you know, to get this show done. And so But people's expectations now become, well, you know, I'm loyal to you as in the audience, so I have these expectations of your time and your energy and your effort. And so that's cool in the early days when it's small and manageable. But when it starts getting too big, then it starts becoming, you know, a full-time job. And that's awesome if you want to be a full-time job. But if you don't, then I think the easiest thing to do is kind of end it. And I think the guys did it, you know, the right way. I think they were clear about it. They said it and they did it and they ended it. It wasn't kind of just all of a sudden just episodes stopped coming into the feed, right? And so I think that was good. And, you know, what I know is that both of them love it. And again, they have a strong relationship because of it. I know Justin because of podcasting. He listened to my Lynchman podcast many, many years ago, right? And so, like, I didn't know that. Like, that's not how I knew we knew each other. But that's literally how our relationship started. So there's a lot of power in podcasting. But it becomes, like, you only have so many hours in the day, so many things you can do.
That's true. That's absolutely true. But yes, I would say that podcasting has been a net positive for us in all the ways that you just said there, especially in expanding the network. I mean, Rogue Startups has really given both of us a great opportunity to talk to folks like yourself, talk to other people that we wouldn't necessarily have another avenue to meet if we weren't like exactly in their space. So that has really helped. And anybody out there listening, doing podcasting themselves would probably agree with that, I'd say. So with regards to fund strapping that you talked about earlier, so now that you guys are a fund-strapped company, and like you said, you're no longer bootstrapped, it's not your money, you don't talk about it the same way, what has that been like? What's that transition been? And do you see your trajectory there changing at all? Or like, are you going to move to the next level and get VC? Or are you going to stay bootstrapped? I mean, I'm not trying to ferret out all your deep, dark secrets here, but you know, like, how has that changed your guys' thinking about LeadFuse and the future?
So the funny thing is, I've done VC twice. I've raised capital twice and promised myself I would never do it again. When I came into the business full time with Justin, told him that I was never going to do it again. And to this day, I stand by that, right? I don't want to do it again. That dynamic is just so negative. I don't care what people say. It's all bullshit. The VCs, you can't create a win-win-win-win, which is what you have to do with VCs, when we have VC-backed business. You got to create a win for your customer. You have to win. Your investors have to win and your company has to win. And that's just impossible to do. And I'm telling you, I don't care what you've done. You're going to lose. If one of the four is going to lose, it's going to be you, right? And so it just changes the dynamic way too much. You get all this bad advice because they're in it to go big, right? Go big or go home, because they don't care. And they can pretend, and these guys, the Blagfelds, the founders, all these guys can pretend that they're entrepreneur focused. They're not. They're fund focused, right? They make their money 2 and 20. They make 2% management fee of the fund they raise every year and 20% of the net gains. They make money by raising money. That's their business. Their customers are the investors. You are their product to the investors. So it's kind of the Facebook thing. You have to understand that you're the product. If you're okay with that, cool, right? You want to go build your billion-dollar unicorn? Awesome. That's just not the path I want to try to go down again. It's just too much. So when we started talking about raising money, both Justin and I feel that same way, but we don't want bosses, right? That's not the idea here. But the idea of a lower percentage investment to the business, but with different expectations, because that's what it comes down to. It's expectations, right? So it's a marriage. You know, if you want kids and your wife doesn't want kids, that's going to be a really tough marriage to work through, right? And it's the same thing with taking money, right? If you've got investors that they want $1 billion or nothing, and you just want to build a business, you know, it's going to 100 million, I don't care. There's only 100 million customers. That should be a success. If they don't see it as a success, that's going to be a problem in the relationship. So for us, it was about finding investors that we'd say, look, our goal is, you know, we're going to give you dividends to get your money back. Like, you're going to get your investment back through dividends. And then an exit, if it happens, is your upside. All right. And that's kind of the idea. Now, I actually think what's going to happen is they're going to get multiples of their investment just through dividends. Because, you know, an exit's tough. Like, planning for an exit is the craziest thing in the world to do. Because not only do you have to build a company, which is hard enough, and have it successful, which is hard enough, and have high growth, which is hard enough, and all those things, you also just have to be really lucky in timing, right? So you have to find, if you all of a sudden you go from a $2 million company to a $100 million company in a couple of years, well, that sounds awesome. There are far fewer companies that can buy a $100 million company than one that can buy a $2 million company, right? So, like, you have to be the right size at the right time in the right market. And so there's just so many things outside of your control. To plan on an exit is crazy. And to build a business on that exit, like that kind of multiple exit for investors, you know, you can plan your own exit, you know, kind of build the sell kind of thing, but like, that's not the idea. And so we had to find investors that were like, cool with that. We're like, look, our goal is this. We do want to, you know, exit if it makes sense, but we have to be realistic. That is the far less likely thing to happen, right? It's literally the least likely thing to happen. The most likely thing to happen is you have some mediocre success. Then the next thing is you fail, right? And then the third thing is you exit for a bunch of money. So on the list, the third most, you know, reliable thing is going to be the thing you're aiming for. It just seems like a hard ask. So that was what we did. So I don't think it really changed our philosophy. It didn't change our philosophy. It didn't change a lot of that. They've been awesome. They're very hands-off as another thing. Like, we don't, this is not board seats and voting rights and all that kind of nonsense. This is a, like, this is a highly speculative investment you're making, all right? You might lose all of your money, right? We don't want you to, obviously, but that might happen, and you have to be okay with that. So we put a lot of limits on it. It wasn't a very big round. We didn't let anyone, one person put too much in because we didn't want to have that pressure on them or on us. I think some cool things have happened out of it is that it kind of creates this almost faux board. So now you got to do investor updates. So it kind of forces you to think more in a more corporate-y kind of, hey, let's talk about what's going right, what's going wrong. It also gives you access to some really smart people. Rob Walling is, you know, a really smart business guy, right? But the joke we have internally is, you know, if Rob says it, it's right. Like, and if he's right more often than not. And every time we think we got it, he says, yeah, I hear you, because Rob's the nicest guy in the world too, right? So it's never like you're wrong. It's always like, oh, okay, that's interesting. I think of it this way. And his way is always the right way at the end of the day. And so, you know, that's been awesome to have access to people like that. And, you know, we've got David Hauser and a bunch of other people that are kind of investors in our business, which is great, people that have done. But these aren't VCs. Every one of our investors has built and sold a SaaS company. Right. So that's the way to do it. Every one of them has built and sold at least one SaaS company. And so who am I going to give advice for? Someone who's built and sold a SaaS company, or some VC who's, you know, using some university's money? Right. Mm-hmm. So like, that's the difference.
Yeah.
You have to align those goals. So I don't think it's changed anything like that. But what it has done, it gave us the ability to fail 20 out of 30 tests last year. Right. If we didn't have that money, we couldn't have done that. If we didn't have that money, I think what would happen if we didn't take that money is we would be, you know, one of these, you know, we would have had this mediocre success that you're not quite big enough to ever invest back in the business, but you know, you're not small enough that you just say, screw it, let's close it down. And you kind of just grind for years. I think that's, you know, a likely outcome at that point. So it was very important that we took it. It's been great. They've been amazing. The whole experience has been awesome, but we have no plans to raise any more money.
And so most of the money that you took, you spent on marketing and sales. I mean, a little bit of technical stuff probably, but most of it was on just growing the business.
Yeah. I mean, so for us though, that means mostly it was spent on product, on developers.
Okay.
So we went from, you know, a part-time developer to two full-time developers and some help. So that's literally where we put all the money. Plus in our business, we have real costs too. Not just do we have, you know, crazy, you know, $6,000 a month AWS bills, but we've got, you know, lead costs as well. Like, you know, while we do a lot of the work ourselves, we also have other sources we source the stuff from and put it all into the cauldron and mix it together. So we have real hard, you know, cogs, the cost of goods sold. We have hard cogs. So like, there's a lot of that happens. So it was mostly spent on that, and then spent on a bunch of sales and marketing experiments that failed. So
that's cool. Super cool, man.
No, I think that's great. I think it's been a bit of a rambler on my end. So, but it's been interesting. I think the thing is that, you know, I'm 45 years old. I've been in selling since I was 15. I've been tech and software forever. It doesn't get easier. Like, it does. It's funny. So the thing I love about LeadFuse has been, Justin's been great, but you know, having a belief in what you're selling is great. And like, actually being able to do that is because I'm telling you, like, last year was a really tough year. And so you keep on waiting for the hockey stick, right? And it doesn't seem to work. And so I talked to, you know, again, a lot of our investors, a lot of people that have this, even quote unquote, really successful ones, like, it's not this, you know, huge success at any point. And it's not the one lever you're going to pull that's going to just turn it around. And I know that it does happen for some people. Well, good for them. Some people win the lottery too. All right. So the reality is you got to figure out, you know, who do you serve and how do you serve them? Right? That's what you got to figure out. And then everything else is tactical after that. Right. And all the tactics, try them all. try all of them. So cold email, paid ads, I don't care what it is, try it, figure out what works or not. But none of them are going to work if you don't know who you serve and how you serve them.
Thanks for the advice on that one. Where can everybody find you? Don't take it. Well, I think that's good advice because I know that I personally got caught up in that whole best practices with cold email thing when I was doing my 2 to 3 month stint on it. And my output from that was the best practices didn't work for me. Like right. I tried all of those things and they didn't resonate. So I was like, well, suck, that's not exactly what I expected with a best practice, but you're absolutely dead right. Try it. See if it works. The only way you're going to know if it's a best practice for you is through direct experimentation. There's no other way to get.
I think there's another thing here we're not talking about too much which is also like, if in order for to really be super successful at some level, you have to kind of like to do it as well. So I think content marketing is a perfect example of this, right? So content marketing absolutely works, right? If you write good content, it solves people problems and do it long enough, it is a needle mover for every business. But that's the challenge. The challenge is it takes a long time. And so if you don't have some, if you don't like it, if you don't like creating content, if you don't like doing those things, it's not something you like to do, you're not going to do it long enough for it to work. You're not going to do it well enough for it to work. And like, this is the thing we don't talk about enough is people that have success at doing something in one way, if you scale it back, it comes down to they like to do it. They're good at it. Like there's these other factors that play, right? So there isn't a magic bullet. It just does not exist. And so you got to kind of figure out, well, would I rather spend an hour a day, hour and a half a day, kind of figuring out researching cold email leads and kind of setting them out at scale, or I'd rather spend that hour and a half a day writing a blog post or doing this or, going to networking events or doing a podcast, whatever that kind of marketing channel happens to be. I do believe that some level of enjoyment from that function has to exist for you to kind of stick with it long enough to see the results of the end. Because no marketing technique works in 90 days. Just nothing. Just nothing does. It just doesn't. I mean, it doesn't work. You're not going to double your business through seminars or webinars or anything in 90 days. You're just not going to do it. It's going to take you a long time. Content, everything. It's a grind. So
the grind is real.
The grind is real.
There's your advice. I'll take that one to the bank. The grind is real.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you so much for being on today, Damien. Where can people find you and get more info on LeadFuse?
Yeah. So LeadFuse.com, LeadFuse.com. Email me. I love email clearly. So Damien@LeadFuse.com and wherever else. Check out the blog. So if you actually want to get, if you want to ignore my advice right now and actually take some advice, go check out the blog. Justin and the content team have done a great job building up a really good resource center there of kind of content.
All right. If you have any other questions for Damien following up on cold email, LeadFuse, or anything else, drop us a line, podcast@roguestartups.com. And if you're liking the show, we would love to hear from you on iTunes with a review. Until then, we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.